It is my great pleasure to welcome for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Michaela Cordio, PhD. She is the author of Seamus the Leprechaun, this book, Gift of the Leprechauns, this book we have here, and a story for children of all ages. We have been looking forward to this event for a long time, and we are delighted to welcome her to Many Rivers.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for coming. I had a great time writing this book, but most of my writing has really been for adults. And I knew I was supposed to write a children's book. I knew there was almost literally nothing to teach children about how to work with light. So the book was designed to teach in the most simple and explanatory method how to actually do some of the basic tools of working with light. I was trained as a psychic and a healer, and a friend of mine, or one of my fellow students, he was 65 at the time, he says, "How have I just learned this now? We should have learned this in school." So I've been threatening to write a book, everything I didn't learn in kindergarten. But everything I needed to know, I learned in psychic school. So, so this book is written in a story format, and I've actually been trained as a channel by the Ascended Masters, and I've worked in that field for like 25 years and also as a healer. And my first book is this book, Live and Love, and it was based on teachings that I've received in my own spiritual journey over about a 20-year period. Plus, there's a certain amount of new stuff in it that really isn't available anywhere else. And I'll read you some of the quotes, because I love what people said about it. Some of my first readers were great. One lady says, "It's the best book I ever read. I use it every day." I mean, you know, really. Like, okay, I said, you're the first one on the list. And the actual first person who ever read it just read the first paragraph and burst into tears. So there's some really deep and beautiful stuff in it. It really touches people beautifully. And it has like 20 different exercises, and this is really for adults and people who are on a pretty serious spiritual path. But it's lovely, and lots of good stuff in it. And so I got the inspiration. Now, don't ask me if I've ever seen a leprechaun, because I was just telling her that I met a leprechaun when I was at an event up in Mount Shasta on the Wesak, which is in May, the Buddha's birthday. And this man comes up to my booth, and he looks like a normal man, right, you know, and he comes up and he says, "Oh, I've got all these shamrock keychains. I should give them to you. I have a whole bunch left over. I did this event for St. Patrick's Day. I played a leprechaun." And then, you know, I met him a little bit later, and he showed me the little video of him playing the leprechaun with his pot of gold and his hat and the whole costume. I looked at him, I looked at the video, I looked at him, and I said, "I think you really are a leprechaun." So it's because of the work I've been doing, it's been my privilege to actually see who people are on an inner level. And I have met a couple of fairies. I know it's going to sound strange, but I was explaining to my grandson the other day, and he thought it was strange, so you'll probably think it's strange too, but one of my friends had decided to get a bunny rabbit. And so she had a friend who had a bunny rabbit. She thought it'd make a great pet. And her friend comes over, and she says, "Well, yes, I have a rabbit, but my rabbit's a French lop-eared rabbit, and she's going to get something else." And I looked at her, and I thought, "You are a French lop-eared rabbit." So there are people here on the planet in human form that come from all the kingdoms. It doesn't take much imagination to look around and see people who are angels, because there are some people that are so kind, so beautiful in soul and in form, that people tell them that. They say, "Oh, you're such an angel." You know, you just know it. And some of you may know that you're angels, but there's everything here. I mean, it's really, it's a little weird, but, you know, if I were to write a book about leprechauns, you just have to assume a little bit of weird. And really, when I first started this whole path, I was so afraid people were going to, you know, I'd say, "Oh, I'm doing psychic healing." Because it didn't really feel safe to share that with people. But, you know, it didn't take me very long before I realized that they weren't worried about it. Why was I worried about it? So I had to kind of get over that. But anyway, this book, it was kind of challenging. It took me about 5 years to write it. There was a period where I didn't want to work on it for a year because I knew the kids that were the main subjects were going to be tested and some scary thing was going to happen to them, and I was afraid to find out what it was. Well, it wasn't that scary when I finally got my nerve up and wrote it. I was like, oh, that wasn't so bad. Why was I so worried? Well, I'm a worrier. It's one of the things that all my teachers have been working on me for a while. But I want to read you what Seamus the Leprechaun, who's the key character in the book, says about the book. This is just a little short piece of it. He says, you see, the leprechauns and humans, my accent's not great, so please excuse that, if truth be told, haven't gotten along too well for many, many years. I've made it my mission to be part of the correcting of that sad piece of history. This is a story about two children who have their fair share of the world's troubles. But you see, I'm in the story, and that makes all the difference. I'm not there to do magic or to weave a spell that lets them forget their troubles. My job is far more subtle and complex than that. I'm there to help them grow in their understanding, in their character, in their sense of self-mastery and self-worth. And to tell it like it is, I'm there to teach them a bit about the hidden realms, the fairy kingdom, the soul, and the realms of light and love. Each chapter is a new adventure and touches on some life lessons, such as death of a pet, dealing with a bully, and divorce in the family. Grown-ups seem to like it a lot, too, and the tools really work. So I had one of my child readers was the daughter of a friend, and he says, she really needs to talk to you. I said, okay. So she was about 10, and I ran into her at a coffee shop. And she comes up, and she said, do you know how to make a ball of light? And I said, yes, I do. And I said, do you know how to make a ball of light? And she said, no. I said, well, let's do it now. So I'm not sure that I explained it as perfectly in the book as I should have, so I'm going to kind of give you a demo on one of the early exercises the children do. So basically I explain to them, you rub your hands together and warm them up, and then just kind of pat your hands gently together. Don't actually touch, but just kind of feel there's a little density. You can feel it just feels a little different as you get close. So just kind of pat them a little bit close, and then you can build that up. Just let it get a little bit brighter and stronger. I think the mistake I made was making them think they could see it, or somehow giving the impression you might be able to see it. You can feel it. Can you all feel a little bit of something in there? Yes? Is that a yes?
Do you know yourself?
I'm sorry, what? No, I don't.
That means yes.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. All right, I got it now. And so in the exercise that the children learn, well, let me tell you a little bit about the children first so that you know how this is playing out. So the two children are Sam and Katie. Sam is 8 and Katie is 10. And Sam is being bothered by a bully at school, and he's pretty upset about it. And Katie, her family's getting a divorce, and there's so much arguing and yelling in the house that it's really upsetting her stomach, and it's meaning she has trouble eating and she's having trouble in school. So they're on their way home, talking, trying to help each other with what seems like a horrible problem, and really, they're not very nice problems for either one of them. So they run into Seamus the Leprechaun, who is on a mission to heal this breach with humanity, and that's kind of his job, to take the whole leprechaun kingdom out of, well, they made a vow at one time, they'd never trust humans again, and they've played a lot of tricks on people over the years, so this is to kind of cancel that. And so this is the only reason I finished the book. I was feeling so guilty that I wasn't helping him enough to finish what he wanted to do. I had to finish the book. But anyway, so Sam and Katie, he's teaching them, they've met, and he's teaching them how to work with light. So they get their little ball of light going, and he's explaining things to them, and then they they noticed like it's gone because they were listening to him and they weren't paying attention, and so they had to build it up again and feel that little ball of light. And then he teaches them about how to put their intention, their love, their present to one another in a little message into the light, whisper it in, or, you know, intend it in, or pray it in, or however they did it, and then give it to one another. So Katie says, well, I want to try it on myself. I want to make sure, you know, I want to know what it does before I start giving it to somebody else. So she does it. She says, oh, that feels good. Okay. So she does it, and she gives it to Sam, and that was fine. And he says, okay, and he gives it to her. He says his little prayer, and he gives it to her. And she bursts into tears. And he goes, oh, no, did I do something wrong? So Seamus the Leprechaun explains, no, she had so much sadness in her. It had to come out in order so that she could feel the love and the goodness. So each one of the chapters has all these really sweet little moments where, you know, it's like he's teaching them how to talk to God. And he says, now get a very clear idea in your mind about what God is, and then just talk to him. And Sam says, well, I don't have a real clear idea of what God is. Is God a man or a woman? My mom and my grandma say God's a woman. And so, you know, they say all these cute things, and, you know, there's great dialogue between them, and I think it helps. I mean, part of what I have seen that this book is capable of doing, when I had children, my daughter probably knows this, it wasn't easy for me to talk about spiritual things with them. And this kind of creates a framework in the storyline where a topic that you might want to talk about can come up and be dealt with. But frankly, my adult readers are loving it. So they don't have to talk to children about it. They just are liking it for themselves. There's lots of tools. You know, the basic tools that I learned in psychic school, and I've been teaching for years, but unless you go to psychic school, you know, they're not necessarily everyday lessons that people get, so they're good. So anyway, I marked off a couple of places where there's some little bits of the story that I'd share with you. So let's see, what was the first one? Okay. Skip that one. Let's see, I wanted to go to the fairies. There it is. Okay. One of the little things they do is they go and visit the flower fairies. And this is the part where Sam is telling what happened when he went to go visit. Okay, so Sam, I'll start. My fairies are wood sprites, and their names are Jake and Jacob. They're twins. They work with the trees to help keep the bark strong and healthy. They also like to play with the little insects in the grass, and they know a whole lot about which bugs are good for the trees and which ones aren't. They said most of the times the bugs don't hurt the trees, but if something happens to, like break the bark or pull off a branch, then some of the not-so-good bugs can come and make trouble for the tree. Then Jake and Jacobs and all their friends help the tree to make special protection stuff so the bugs can't do too much trouble. They said sometimes there's just too much to fix and the tree can get sick and even die. They asked me to tell as many children as I can not to pull the branches off the trees or pull off the bark because it can make it too easy for the tree to get sick. They said if we ask for the right kind of branches, they can be sure that just the right kind of branch, the tree will help to make it just fall down. There isn't always one just lying around, and they might have to give a tree a little time. Sometimes it takes a while. Wow, they sure know a lot about trees. They don't teach half this stuff at class. Thanks, Jack and Jacob. That was really good. Okay, so then Katie tells her story, and she meets these three flower fairies. Two of them are other fairy children, kind of, and one is their teacher, and that's a cute dialogue, but I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to give you a little flavor of some of the different things. So one of the stories, they have a past life regression. The kids have just gone to the Grand Canyon, and they come back and they're telling how that was. And Seamus says, well, I think you both have had a past life in the Grand Canyon, so let's go back and look at that. So they go, and it's cute because Sam is a girl and Katie's a boy in this particular lifetime, and Sam gets hurt, and has passed out, and they send Katie, who's now the boy, off to find a medicine man. And that's a real sweet part, but the part I liked the best of that whole thing was how the kids talked about, at the very end, when they came out of that, they're walking home. So that Sam and Katie knew that they would be talking about this adventure for some time, but right now they both just wanted to let it sink in, and they weren't quite ready to share it all yet. So they walked home quietly, paying close attention to their feet and remembering to walk in a special way they had when they were Indians. And they paid close attention to the smells of the earth and to the sounds of the animals as they walked along, noticing things that they had usually ignored before. They saw the way someone had left some wrappers from a hamburger in a paper cup with straw on the side of the walk. Katie walked over and picked them up and threw them in the nearest garbage can. They saw the way lawns were so green with no weeds, and they wondered what would happen if everyone forgot how to honor the gifts of the different plants that people called weeds now. They saw the footprints of a raccoon moving across some dirt under the rose bushes in one yard. Sam pointed and Katie smiled and nodded. They saw many things they hadn't noticed before. There was a lot to think about. So, you know, there, you can sense that progression and that sense of learning to feel nature, and none of the guided visualizations really help them to tune into the earth and to have that sense that they can do it too. I really try to describe the exercises in a way that it could be reproduced. Might need some parental help, but they're doable. In some ways this all started because when I was a little girl, my mother used to make up stories to take me to go play with the flower fairies. And they were very sweet. She said, now make sure, just pretend like you get real small. Okay, and I go, and I had this little girlfriend I played with in the fairy kingdom, and we have an adventure. It was always a different story. I think my mother was channeling these stories, but nobody would ever call it that. It was cute. So anyway, that was kind of my introduction to the elemental kingdom. And there was, there's a lot of sweet parts. There's the part at the very end where they are taken by Seamus to the leprechaun kingdom for a big celebration. And there's a place where the angels have come to the celebration, and there's all these different members of the different elemental kingdoms there. And the angels have a special gift for everybody who comes into their booth. You know, there's a little booth. And each of the gifts, you know, the children, they're like little balls of light, and they see them, and they receive their gift. And they see there's two children standing over on the side looking really sad and upset. An angel's running the booth. So an angel comes and works with the children, helps them get their gift. And they receive a little blessing, and apparently these two children had just arrived in the community and they had been hurt in some fashion. But you know, there's so many beautiful, touching ways. And I don't know if any of you have heard of Telos. Have any of you heard of Telos? Yes, one. Okay. Telos is considered to be one of the fifth dimensional cities that are in the inner earth. And I live in Mount Shasta. It's supposed to be under Mount Shasta, so I hear about it probably more than most. But one of the stories, the children actually go to visit the children of Telos, and they have a beautiful dialogue with each of the children. They share their gifts. And so there's this sense of empowerment and gaining clarity on who they are and what their life purpose is that permeates the book. Anyway, I think it's wonderful. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
So,
yes?
The ball of light is one thing.
Yeah.
What other exercises?
The children learn how to ground, and they learned how to use that usefully. They learn how to talk to their higher self, and some of the other exercises they do. There's a place where they work with crystals, and they learn how to work with crystals. There's one place. Oh, here's something. I'll give you all it's in the book, but this is a tool that I think most people aren't familiar with this tool. A friend of mine received this, and we use it really extensively, but most people don't know about it. It's called a present time wand. And when we first received it, it looked like a little Harry Potter wand, but it was like fourth dimensional, so you couldn't see it. Well, we're moving into the fifth dimension, so the new wands are now fifth dimensional, and they look a little different. But, you know, they work. But what does a present time wand do, and, you know, can you use it now? Yes, they're like effortless to use. That's the good news. The truth is that you're possibly familiar with the fact that sometimes we get stuck in the past. You know, it's like, oh, my husband, blah, 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 or my mother did this to me, or my father was like, you know, and we haven't necessarily, we may have done a lot of work on it, but it's still, there's energy, and it's stuck, and it's in our field somewhere. It could be a past life thing. It could be anything. All you have to notice is that you're not in present time, and that there's a lot of emotional charge about something. So you take your little present time wand, etheric though it may be, and you consciously just tap the problem, whatever it is. It releases energy stuck in the past, brings it up, allows it to be in present time for you. So it's not like you don't forget it, but it no longer has that emotional charge stuck in the past. I don't know how many of you have been doing your own personal healing work, but those of us who've been doing it for years began noticing that we didn't have 6 years or 5 months or even 3 days to work on a project. We needed it right away, and this does it. Yes.
Is the present time wand imaginary?
No.
It's an actual wand.
It's an actual wand, and it's fifth dimensional, which means it's in the higher realms, and so you can hold it etherically, but you don't necessarily see it. Most of this stuff is done by intention. Years ago, there was a famous psychologist who did a survey of all these famous healers, and he studied, I mean, these were people who would work with somebody and, you know, major diseases were gone. And he tracked them down all over the world, and he interviewed them, and he, exactly what do you do and how do you do it? He wrote it all down, and he compared all these notes. There was only one thing they all had in common. Intention. The intention that the person be well. And so intention is very powerful. So your intention to have it draws it to you. If you're not familiar with working with things like on the inner plane, like I gave this wand to one of my students, and she wanted a real thing, so she went out and got herself a little fairy wand. I mean, you've probably seen them in stores here and there. You know, they're long, they got little things fluttering around them, stars and snowflakes and things, and she was using it so much she broke. But the etheric ones tend to stay in one piece, so it's okay. But I gave you this gift because it really works. I mean, it sounds like it's too easy, but it really works. Did you have a question?
Well, I wanted to see if you could say again the present time wand. So when something comes up that was an old trigger that you were reactive about, you use the wand to...
Just tap. You can imagine that you know where it is in your energy body. You know, it's like you might feel, oh, it's right there. Or, mm-hmm. You know, if it had a physical counterpart, like if you were beaten in a particular location or you broke your leg or you were shot or something, then there would be a physical location. So you kind of tap wherever you think it is, and it releases things.
To release the old energy. So
it releases energy stuck in the past and allows it to come into present time. It gives you more access to more of your own personal energy, basically.
It is similar in theory to an L-rod or dowsing?
L-rods and dowsing are tuned to usually water, but other kinds of energies also. And they locate it and identify it, but they don't necessarily clear it.
I've seen Elrod's work.
Well, I'm not an expert on Elrod's, and there may be a lot more they can do, but you know, all the early work was just to locate things or identify that the energies were there. But that doesn't mean that they can't do a whole lot more.
A friend told me once that I kind of had elf ears.
Uh-huh.
And she had a dream when she was, she didn't know she was pregnant, but she had a dream. She was visited by elves. She was going to have an elf child. And
yeah.
The child came out with elf-looking ears, too. So it was like we were... And when we're together, we're always like just in that kind of a silly elf world. So I thought that was kind of like a synchronicity.
Yes. Well, you know, some people don't really know. I was doing a reading on this one lady, and I'm reading through her chakras, and every chakra there was like a fairy or a gnome, or you know. By the time I got to the fifth or the sixth chakra, I thought, well, something's going on here. And I finally said, you're a fairy. She goes, oh, good. She said, wait till I tell my boyfriend. He will not push me around anymore. So people don't necessarily have a sense of that because it seems so unlikely. In the way we were raised, the way our society has created things, it was not in the realm of the fact that they existed wasn't even considered a possibility, and that you might be one would be like really unlikely. But welcome to the world that I live in, anyway, where you know who you are on many levels. Any more questions about the present time wand? I didn't finish answering your question. Another thing I taught people is violet flame. It's in the book for children also. And if you ever heard of the violet flame, I know my daughter has. You have. Okay, violet flame is
violet.
Violet, yes. If you think of the seven colors of the visible spectrum, violet is the highest vibrational frequency of the visible spectrum. In esoteric systems, each color has certain qualities or characteristics that are representative of certain divine qualities. And violet is the qualities that it carries primarily are forgiveness, the transmutation of negativity, and freedom. And this was a gift, I guess you could say, that was released to humanity in the 30s. A man named Godfrey Ray King, well actually his name was Guy Ballard, but that was his book writing name was Godfrey Ray King. He went to Mount Shasta and he met Saint Germain, who's an ascended master, who is a whole other story. But anyway, he had all these personal experiences with this man, and he received all these teachings, and he ended up starting this worldwide movement of people that were studying these teachings. And violet flame is pretty widely distributed now around the world in a lot of the New Age communities in terms of people knowing it and how to work with it. But it's another tool that I use all the time because so many people need to clear their stuff as quick as they can. And I just tell people, make a campfire, make it violet, throw stuff in it. Mm-hmm. So if you had an argument with your boss or your husband or several times with whoever it was, or all the stuff in your mother, and classic case, a lot of women and I don't know how many men have this, I know women are very open to other people's emotional energy. You know, oh, Jane just came by and she dumped all her crap on me again. I feel like crap now. You don't have to keep other people's emotional energy. It'll make you feel lousy. So you can ask for assistance in clearing all that emotional energy out of your body. Violet flame transmutes it. You can clear it out of your body and just send it on, and then somebody else runs into it. So the energies don't just go away. They're sitting there. So these are tools that are that are written in this book, they're written about in a way that children can understand and work with it in a very simple way. But it works. I mean, these tools sound like they're so easy. How can they work? They work like they're miraculous, really, but real, yes.
So violet flame, so do you put special things into the fire to make it violet, or will the fire have that in it?
No. Visualization. You don't actually need to build a fire.
Oh, okay.
Makes it easier. I mean, some people like to have a candle. They get a purple candle. You don't need that. I mean, you need something that you can use instantly. Not, okay, I've got to find a place where I can build a campfire, and I'm going to make it purple. You know, no, just, it's there, it's purple. And I tell people, sometimes you need a bonfire. But campfire works for most things. But sometimes you've had a really bad time, bad day,
so
and you
just visualize the flame.
That's right. You can have a pillar of violet flame. You can stand in it. You can run violet flame when you're taking your shower, inside, outside. It doesn't hurt anything. It just clears anything that's negative. But the other thing is that after you've taken energy out of your body, the principle is nature abhors a vacuum. So you want to replace it with good stuff. If you've taken out somebody's yucky stuff, you replace it with good stuff. So I have people imagine a gold sun, bring it through the top of their head, fill themselves up with gold light. But you can pick rainbow light, you can pick white light, whatever feels good and healing and nurturing. Any other questions? Oh, good. So everybody's having time. Oh, I'm not talking long enough here. Let me think of something else to say. Let me just check in and see what we've got to tell you about something here. Okay, I'm being asked to actually have you do the violet flame exercise. So here's our bonfire. And all of these colors of the different, they call them rays, the different colors, they have all these angels that are associated with them. And they're basically divine qualities. So there's different angels that are associated with each ray. So you can ask the angels to give you, it's like, okay, I want to do this, but I don't have a clue how to do it. You just ask the angels to help and let them take care of it. Angels are required to wait until you actually ask. That's one of the rules of angels, that if you don't ask, they can't help. And occasionally they'll kind of break the rules and help you save your life or something, but mostly it helps to ask. So here's our campfire. It's violet. Just close your eyes for a second and imagine that there's something. It can be pain, it can be family issues, family karma. It clears karma, past life stuff. It can clear generations forward and backward. So whatever, you know, it's like you've had child abuse in your family for five generations, whatever it is that you would like cleared, just throw it in the campfire. And you can imagine that you can go from your feet, pull any energy that's collected in your feet connected to this, through your legs, your knees, your hips, from your pelvic area, your stomach, solar plexus, your heart, your lungs, your throat, your head. Any part of your being, your physical, emotional, mental, or higher bodies, just throw it in, let it be cleansed. And then bring in a gold sun. Imagine a gold sun over the top of your head. Allow it to just gently descend. You can move to your heart and radiate from your heart throughout your body and fill you with light. Fill all the spaces that have been cleared with light. And when you feel complete, you can bring your attention back into the room. Did anybody have an experience they'd like to share from what we just did? Are you willing to share? Okay.
Well, I was telling you earlier that I was feeling like I had asthma all of a sudden in the last year, and
mm-hmm.
then you thought, oh, I don't know, like asthma or something, something's choking you, and I was like, it feels like something's choking me. Sometimes when I speak a whole lot excitedly about something, I'll start to get really constricted in the throat, and I can almost not even speak, and then as soon as I stop talking and relax for 30 seconds, it goes away. But and so I was just imagining taking this snake off my neck and pushing it into it's kind of my canvas for this moment. Went in. And then when I envisioned the ball of light coming through my head, I yawned really, really, really broadly. And then as soon as I stopped, I coughed. Like something was like coming out almost.
Wow. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
I was imagining the gold sun. Head, and he was like pulling my head down and like through his energy field.
He wanted some of that light, didn't he? Was everybody able to do the exercise? Okay, good. So, it's that simple, really. And I had this one man I was working with, and he'd had these terrible problems with his legs. I don't know, it's like a skin disease or pain, or can't even remember what it was anymore, but it was a lot of pain in his leg. And when I did the reading, I realized he was taking on all this crap in his office. There was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of negativity, he was just taking it on, it was showing up in his leg. So I cleared it out, and he says, that's the first time I've been out of pain for 2 years. Did he keep doing it? No. Did he stop going to the office? No. Did his pain come back? Yes. So it's not that I suggest if you're having a bad time in your office you should quit your job, although that's certainly a possibility. But if you've got a tool that helps you to be free of the negativity, use it. I mean, it's not like it's going to last forever if you keep getting the problem back in. So violet flame is one of those things that if you use it every day, it's usually worthwhile. My daughter used to tell me that she thought I was saying violent ray. No, violet.
Michaela, don't you need to, before bringing the visualization, clear your space with the white light or something first to make sure that you're, that while you're doing that cleansing and emptying out, that you're protected?
If you're having attack from like something more serious, then then that's a wise thing. But generally, you can just do the violet flame without calling in all the extra protection. Because you've already, in doing it, you're basically calling angels in to work with you on it. But that's a good point. And usually if I'm working with a client, I'll set a whole angelic field and protection and stuff. And but if you've got like major entities that are attacking, then it's wise to either have some experience in working with that or call somebody who actually knows how to deal with it, because it's not necessarily pretty. But it's very empowering, actually, if you find that you have to learn how to come against some of these inner plane bad guys, and you learn how to do that and how to protect yourself, and it is empowering. You have to step out of being a victim and claim your mastery to deal with that. But it still can be challenging in the learning process. So, yeah. It's always wise to put up a field of protection. Yes?
Well, there's something about light that I just recently discovered, and I'd like to
go ahead.
Get your comment on it. I was recently introduced to candle gazing.
Uh-huh.
And an amazing thing happened to me. It's like this light comes down, or these rays of light come down to the candle, and then a ray comes out from the candle straight to my heart.
That sounds nice.
And I mean, I don't know if it's, it's a spiritual thing, but is it some law of physics? But it's really dramatic.
Does it happen every time, or was that like a one-time special deal?
I have to squint my eyes, just close my eyelids just to a certain point, to turn my head just right, and it comes down. Sometimes if I squint my eyes, it'll be a single beam coming down, a single beam coming out, or usually it's a beam of beams like this, a lot of beams of light, but they focus at the candle, and then a predominant beam comes straight to my heart.
I find that they'll send light to you any way you'll receive it. What I call the team. Are you familiar with the concept of the higher self and guides and teachers and things on the inner plane? Whoever is working with you, on whatever level, they love to send love and light into us. And there are people who are doing solar gazing early in the morning.
I tried the same thing with the sun, and you can't look at the sun
early in the morning.
You can't look at the sun because it's too bright. But when the sun sets and it's just setting or it's going down, up in the trees, it's the energy of the sun is mitigated enough to where you can actually look at it.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens with the sun.
Yes. Yeah. Well, basically, a candle flame is holding sunlight. So you're still getting sun energy.
I'm just amazed.
Yes. Yes. Well, when those love rays come in, it is amazing. You looked like you were wanting to ask a question.
Well, I was just noticing that you seem a little leprechaunish. I was wondering if you had any of that in your family line.
Not that I know of, honestly, and I have to apologize because I do have a really good leprechaun hat I forgot to bring. Which kind of brings more of it out. I don't know. Have you ever noticed that in our line? The leprechaunish?
Well, I do think you have a lightness to you. You tend to be more jolly than in that sense, like kicking your heels up cute.
Okay, well, I didn't know anybody ever saw me that way, so thank you, Bob. not to my knowledge, but you know, I did. My mother did take me to play with the flower fairies, and I wasn't a fairy, so maybe I was a leprechaun. I don't know. Mm.
So you said that the leprechauns have made an oath to never trust humans, but this particular leprechaun, Seamus,
he was on a mission to kind of cancel that. You know, he'd been given that mission to do something to like
to
change that. To bridge that.
Yeah.
And as he says in the introduction, where does he say that? Everybody, all kingdoms are moving from the third dimension into the fifth dimension, and the leprechaun kingdom needed to clear that in order to do it. So that was part of his purpose.
Talk about some of the
Well, there's angelic kingdoms, there's a lot of different elemental kingdoms, there's the mineral kingdom, I mean, there's the humans, different evolutionary paths, I guess you'd say, not all of them visible. It'd be easier if you ask a particular question.
What does the fifth dimension mean?
Okay, that's a good question. What does the fifth dimension mean? In this book, I kind of go into it in a little bit more detail. You know, physicists describe height, breadth, and depth as the three dimensions, and then time, and then they really don't know what the other dimensions are. I don't believe that. I believe that's all, height, breadth, and depth are all definitions of the physical dimension that we live in. That's the first dimension. The second dimension is the emotional. Third is the mental. So we live in the physical, the emotional, and the mental. Those are the three dimensions we live in. And the emotional and the mental are not visible dimensions. And it's like a fan. When it starts going really fast, you really can't see it. If it goes fast enough, you actually can't see it. And that's what's going on in the different dimensions. It's a higher vibrational frequency. And that's what's happening. We're actually shifting vibrationally, lifting the whole planet, us and the whole planet, into higher and higher frequency.
Can you share some insights about music?
Music. I have two particular insights that have meant a lot to me over my development. The first one was that music is really touching people because it's nonverbal. It can really shift people in amazing ways. I've seen so many musicians working at conferences and something, and every single person is touched by it and then lifted in the process. So that aspect of music is very powerful. The other thing that I've noticed about music, and I've heard it said that, you know, a lot of the rock and roll was
evil,
yes, or bad, or terrible, and a lot of music is regarded that way. You know, some is really good, some is not. What it is especially rock and roll, it was designed to break up stuck patterns. By the time rock and roll came in, there was a lot of really stuck energy, stuck habits and stuck patterns all over the earth. And that energy actually broke it up. Well, if you're in a really exalted, beautiful state, you don't want to break up your pattern. So it's not good at certain levels to be listening to energy that is just breaking everything up. But if you're like having a drug problem, it's a good thing. You know, so it depends on where your consciousness is, how it's working. But those two things on music, music, there's studies now where they have found the vibrational patterns of healthy cells. There are different people that are really working with sound in amazing ways. And you can actually reproduce the frequency patterns that a healthy cell gives off and help people to become well again. And I honestly believe there's going to be a lot more sound and music in healthcare.
Um, where I work at OEDC, sometimes the guy, the garden manager, he plays music to all the plants in the nursery every day.
Right.
And that's actually research that's been confirmed. That if he didn't play that music, and he's seen the effects of not playing it over certain amounts of time, and like a downshift in the health and the energy of the plants.
What did he play?
He plays mostly African music because that's what he likes. I personally think that it has a lot to do with his energy being brought to the plant,
mm-hmm.
and how he is affected when he listens to the music. Not necessarily the plant directly, but...
Well, the research I've heard about that is that the plants seem to like classical music, although they probably like New Age music too. I mean, you know, soothing music. And the research has been done without the humans involved, just the music, and it does help.
Yeah.
Well, it could also be that the nature spirits, for lack of a better term, particularly like that African music,
uh-huh,
because
great.
From what I understand, they're involved with the actual growth of the plants.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The... The stories about Findhorn, I don't know if you're all familiar with Findhorn,
mm-hmm.
a community in Scotland, where they did a lot of experimental work. They were working directly with the elemental kingdom in growing their gardens, and they were having phenomenal success. And I know people in this country who are using those techniques and very happily.
Music is I think one of the closest thing, well, for me, it's the closest thing to God or that we have as humans that we can perceive, because you can't see it, you can't touch it, but you can hear it, which is our door of perception to it, and you can feel it bodily or emotionally, but you can't really touch it or see it.
And music of high nature is probably affecting those higher levels of energy, what we have an auric field that has layers, and as you go into the higher and higher levels of vibration, of dimensional level, the music is touching that, you know, and the light touches it. We can't see it, we don't know what's happening, but when that is happening, all the rest of us is responding to that and becoming healthier.
Could you talk more about contacting the higher self?
Yes. Okay, let me just tune in for a second to see how the best way to answer that for you is. Okay, what I usually do with people to assist them in contacting the higher self is I have them move their consciousness into their hearts. And there was a mantra I was taught that works pretty good, so I'll share it with you. In Sanskrit, the belief is that the name of God is the sound of the breath as it comes in and as it goes out. And the mantra they use for that is hum, sa. Hum on the in-breath, sa on the out-breath. And when you do that, hum, sa, it actually massages the heart. You can feel energy moving really strongly. If you say it in English, I am that I am, which is the name that was given to Moses when he asked for the burning bush and the whole thing. When you claim that, the name of God, I am, every time you say I am, you're calling on the name of God to create what you say next. So if you say, I am so sick and tired, you're creating that. So you want to contact your higher self, start consciously working with the name I am, and knowing that that aspect is an individualized aspect of you, of God, the fullness, you know, the direct linear link into the allness. And I tell people, you know, just I think Neil Donald Walsh says it in his books, Conversations with God. He says, you know, you want to have a relationship with God, you got to be a friend. You got to talk to him sometime. You know, if you want to have a friend, you got to talk to them. So part of that friendship, of course, is being willing to listen and to hear. But even when we're blocked and we can't hear well, we can feel the presence come in. So, but anyway, it's worked for me. Or I am that I am. Just put your hands on your heart and say, I am that I am. And really, here's my favorite poem, or actually it's not a poem, it's kind of a prayer from Course in Miracles. It's in here. Let's see if I can get to it quick. What page is that? Just have it memorized. Every time I edit the book, it ends up on a different page, so it's sometimes takes me a while to find it. Basically, it goes, I who am host to God am worthy. He who created me as he would have me be. Now, in the Course in Miracles, there's a lot of he's, so just kind of ignore that part. But, you know, I was raised Catholic, and so the big prayer was, oh, Lord, I am not worthy, you know. And so it was a big deal for me when I started channeling. I found out who I was channeling. It was a little scary. It's like, really? How did I get you? It's like, you wouldn't trust anybody else. I was like, okay, I can believe that. So the big thing for me was just to feel it was okay for divinity to actually have a relationship with me, to feel worthy, to feel okay. And then, you know, I started hanging out with other people who felt that way too, and it made it easier, you know. But so where, I don't know where I put that prayer. Okay, oh, here it is. I'll give you the whole thing. I who am host to God am worthy. He who established his dwelling place in me created it as he would have it be. It is not needful that I make it ready for him, but only that I do not interfere with his plan to restore to me my own awareness of my readiness, which is eternal. I need add nothing to his plan, but to receive it, I must be willing not to substitute my own in place of it. So that was a big thing for me. I really had to spend a lot of time healing worthiness stuff. It's an ongoing process. It's not, okay, now I've got it, good. You know, it's every day. And that particular mantra or prayer has worked very well for me, but it, you know, if something else works for you, that's good too.
Thank you.
After we're closed, I can do a little energy work on you. And sometimes I can just bring it in. But, alright, I think we're probably done. Are we done?
You got me wondering about the first paragraph.
Yes? What about it? Oh, the first paragraph! Very sweet. Okay. This book was channeled to me from Mother, Father, God. And the first time I worked with that level of divinity was pretty amazing to me. It was really overpowering. And I was given this guided visualization that fortunately I taped, and unfortunately I don't know where the tape is anymore. But it felt feminine to me, so I always think of it as Mother God speaking to me. And she says, God got us all that is. And what did she say? Oh, Mother, Father, God. God got us all that is. Rather daunting, isn't it? I was like, yeah! And it was, she came in so gently. You know, it's just so subtle. I could just barely feel it. And she's doing this visualization, and she's taking us. And she just keeps getting a little deeper and a little stronger, and she's doing this visualization. You're like in a spaceship, and you're seeing the universe. And pretty soon, like, the whole room is just pulsing with the energy, and you're, like, out there with everything. Oh, it was, like, the most amazing thing. And why I have lost that, I apologize. I can't find it. But I know she knows where it is, and it will show up someday on my website. But anyway, That's who wrote the first chapter. Took me a year after I channeled her that first time. The first paragraph. Well, the first chapter, but
okay.
The first paragraph is part of that. But took me a year after that first experience to channel again, because I didn't think I'd ever do anything that good again.
Mm.
So it was pretty intense. All I can tell you. Pretty intense. Okay. Mother God speaks. Beloved ones, I am your divine mother. I am one with all that is. I speak to you now after aeons of silence, because it is now time for the rebirth of the age of the mother. We ask that you come with us on a journey of transformation, a journey of transfiguration. And then she goes into where we've come since 1987. But, you know, what hit her was just feeling the connection. I'm sure that was what it was, the words. I was telling somebody the other day, you never know what's going to hit somebody. I was doing an exercise in one of my early classes, and I was teaching people how to visualize. And so I said, okay, so imagine you see a chair in front of you, and then blow that up. And then, okay, now imagine you see a plate, and then blow that up. And this woman just started sobbing. I mean, we were doing all these little inane things, and she's just tearing her heart out there. So I finished the exercise, and I talked to her. I said, well, what was that all about? She said, well, I was a single mother, and we were very poor. I only had one chair. I only had one plate. It's like, so you really never know what's going to hit somebody. It could be just the most innocent, simple as, you know, it's like, tie your shoelace. Ah! You don't know, off they go. So, I think you...
Thank you very much for visiting Many Rivers.
Thank you.
And, you know, like, I really appreciate you coming here and bringing this wonderful energy to our store.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming tonight. It's very good to see you. And remember the tea tasting this Saturday. It's a lot of fun. You'll love the tea tasting. It's very friendly, and people share a conversation. And there's a donation bowl on the counter. See that bowl there? And any amount that you can contribute will be gratefully received.